Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on our podcast, get vaxxed or else. Delta, the first to raise insurance premiums for its unvaccinated workers. Fortune 500 board member Shelley Archambeau on this as a precedent.
Every company situation is very different. Some companies have situations which people have to work together. The others, you don't. You can be remote. This is very unique to every single company.
One of those companies, the Jam brand. What Smucker's is mandating and how, despite inflation, supply chain, and COVID pressures, Smucker's is taking a bigger bite out of breakfast. CEO Mark Smucker.
Where we have Folgers, Dunkin', and Bustelo. You know, we grew share across all three of those brands in the quarter.
Those stories, plus CNBC's Beijing Bureau Chief Eunice Yoon takes us inside a shop for fake COVID vaccination cards.
Customs officials have seized thousands of these fake cards in places like Tennessee and Alaska.
And while we're in China,
Squawk Booze News.
China's high-end liquor is under pressure. It's Thursday, August 26th, 2021. It's National Dog Day.
They're so good and so pure. They do so much for us, and they never ask for thanks.
Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Melissa Lee along with Joe Kernan. Becky and Andrew are off today. It is National Dog Day, as Joe has reminded me.
Thank you for bringing that up. That way I don't have to.
I knew you were going to, so I might as well nip it at the bud. Business leaders committed billions of dollars to bolster cybersecurity efforts at a White House meeting with President Biden yesterday. The White House said Apple would create a program devoted to making security improvements across its technology supply chains. Google said it would invest more than $10 billion over 5 years to strengthen cybersecurity and pledged to train 100,000 Americans in technical fields. Microsoft, meantime, committed $20 billion over 5 years to deliver more advanced security protocols. CEO Satya Nadella tweeted after the meeting that the company would invest $150 million to help government agencies upgrade their security systems and expand training partnerships. IBM pledged to train more than 150,000 people in cybersecurity skills over 3 years and partner with historically black colleges and universities to help diversify the workforce. And Amazon Web Services is planning to give account holders free multi-factor authentication devices to secure their data. It will offer security awareness training to companies and to individuals.
As more American businesses demand proof of vaccination, more Chinese counterfeiters are making bogus vaccination cards. Eunice Yoon joins us now with more.
Fake COVID-19 vaccination cards are on sale in China online, marketed with plastic sleeves or holders custom made for the cards. One vendor tells us their certificates will be shipped from a major business area in Zhejiang Province or from a warehouse in the industrial town of Shenzhen. This batch of 100 is from the manufacturing hub of Yiwu. The forgeries are made to look as if they're issued by the Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC. But typos in both English and Spanish give the bogus version away. Even the word vaccine is misspelled. The fake and its holder sell here for 8 cents. On the black market, cybersecurity firms found the faux cards priced anywhere from several dollars to hundreds. This vendor says she shipped 10,000 to the U.S. this month alone.
We've had this discussion on the set a lot about when New York's going to mandate something. And there are ways to do more than just, I don't know how you expect anything different, given how easy it is to have one of these things that look authentic. You need to do a barcode. I mean, it needs to be in the computer system from the healthcare provider where you got it so that it can be checked. So this won't be, they're not going to be making money for a long time, I don't think, on this, Eunice. Once people, authorities get their act together.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the people, the vendors here definitely are aiming to make a lot more money. But as you said, the authorities are clamping down over in the U.S. Like, customs officials have seized thousands of these fake cards in places like Tennessee and Alaska. But the vendors also told us that they've been advising their middle agents, they're kind of the middlemen agents, that if they end up facing potential trouble in the U.S., they could just send these in small batches because it makes it a lot more difficult to trace on the other end.
I mean, I know you look on anything and it's made in China, but why these? I mean, there's no one in the United States that figured it.
Well, I was thinking if you had a laser printer and some cardstock,
right,
why you wouldn't be able to just do it yourself.
Right.
I'm not trying to say that anybody should do this, but it seems easy enough.
Okay, thanks for that. Thanks for the report, Eunice. Appreciate it. See you. U.S. regulators are reportedly investigating Deutsche Bank's asset management arm. The Wall Street Journal reports that the probe comes after the firm's former head of sustainability said the division overstated how much it used sustainable investing criteria. Overstated. And we saw this piece in the Journal last week in the op-ed pages about promise of ESG. These guys talk a good game.
$2 trillion globally.
But stakeholders,
in ESG,
but stakeholders,
fund.
Nobody. Yeah, but stakeholders, nobody's doing what. I was glad. I was glad because I'm a Milton
ESG
Friedman.
It is.
I'm a Milton Friedman guy. Stakeholders are fine. I think they're satisfied by the original goal of what you do. I think that filters down into everything. You don't do bad things PR wise.
Right,
you don't do bad things to the environment.
Exactly.
You don't do.
Right. You
mind
dump chemicals into the river, your stock will be punished.
You mind your P's and Q's in terms of satisfying your customers, your employees, and then everything else follows. All the rest is virtue signaling and, you know, business. And I've told the business roundtable that. And then
about
you know,
ESG.
Not ESG, but just the whole stakeholder virtue signaling.
Squawk Booze News. China's reportedly cracking down on its liquor industry. Shares of major distillers have all fallen over the last week on reports that regulators are trying to rein in the soaring costs of high-end spirits. Attendees of a meeting between producers and regulators said the focus is on cooling off an overheated market. Prices of some bottles of Baijiu from high-end distiller Moutai fell as much as $46 in one day, according to state media. Chinese liquor stocks are among the top five most invested mainland China stocks by foreign institutional investors. High-end liquor is often a gift also, Joe, and a lot of these stocks of companies that make things that would be high-end gifts have fallen since President Xi made that speech about income inequality and making things a little bit more level in society.
That I did not know. Liquor stocks. So there's very communist country, there's high-end. Not everyone...
Louis Vuitton, Hermes, high-end liquor.
Part of the income
cars,
inequality,
which
is a fascinating subject for me to talk about with China, I think. Income inequality.
Because the inequality seems so great.
Because it's a communist country, and because it's supposed to be egalitarian, and it's not. And then you wonder, for someone who, it's like, do what I say, not what I do, for the leaders in China, because they're all wealthy, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
and
so many places.
And the public reveres people like Jack Ma.
Right. But if you're going to really not ever change your stripes just in terms of personal freedom, if you really are going to, you know, mm-hmm. have this weird hybrid between a free market and capitalism, but where human rights and personal freedom is so restricted, if you're really going to keep it, you need that control. You can't just control, you know, you control companies, you own them, but you also got to control the populace. And part of that problem is you don't want a billion people really PO'd that there's, you know, a couple million that have all this money.
Right.
So it's just in their best interest to not let it happen. Even though a meritocracy, I still think, is the best way to do things because it rewards hard work.
Well, that's why we are Americans.
How do they keep the meritocracy going over there when they... You know, everything they do
it's like
is
dangling just enough,
right.
Just enough. You can get here, you can have this without too much. That's part of the reason for the Chinese tech crackdown that we've seen.
Right.
They don't want too much power in the hands of the tech companies,
right,
which have all the data on your income, on everything, because people are using Alipay instead of state-run payment systems.
So sometimes you got to hand it to them, just in terms of intelligence and ruthlessness, that they're able to keep control the way they do.
Machiavellian.
What do we got, 300 plus here, and they have five, six times.
Yeah.
So whenever they're trying to do anything, they got to do it five or six times as well as we do it for the number of people that are there.
Yeah.
Hard. It's hard work. Hard, and they need a decider. U.S. I fall back in. I don't know why.
I fall back into W
every once in a while. They need a strategic.
Next on Squawk Pod, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, incentives, threats, and everything in between. Shelley Archambault, board member of Verizon, Okta, Nordstrom, and a former CEO herself, takes us inside the room where all these decisions are happening.
We need people to work. We need people to service our clients. And as you look across the board, that's really what all businesses are trying to do. They're trying to keep business and economy going.
We're back after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod.
And welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Melissa Lee. Becky and Andrew are off today. Delta Airlines becoming the first major company to impose a financial penalty on unvaccinated employees. Now, starting November 1st, those who haven't been inoculated will pay $200 per month more for health insurance premiums. Delta says the fees will cover the higher cost of insuring employees who get COVID. And CEO Ed Bastian said the average COVID hospital stay costs $50,000 per person. He said since the rise of the COVID Delta variant, all employees who have been hospitalized with COVID were not fully vaccinated. So that makes sense. I think to me, and I don't know what I think about it, really. I mean, first you try to pay bonuses, and then you go the opposite and try to actually penalize people. The only thing I thought of was, that were there actuarial calculations actually made? 200 sounds like totally arbitrary. It's like, okay, you don't get them, I'm going to charge you 200. Is that really cover the, or is it just, look, we know there's going to be some hospitalizations with unvaccinated employees. We're just going to raise a certain sum of money and apply it towards that and hope it helps. Or is 200 the actual number? What would it really cost to cover actuarially?
Well, he said $20,000 on 50, average.
50.
Oh, 50.
Yeah. But so how's 200?
But you have to think not every single unvaccinated employee
right.
is going to get hospitalized. So there's
so
a certain.
I just wonder whether there's actual. If there
right.
if really
a,
are insurance. If insurance
involved.
People have actually looked at that.
I think that's a good question. I mean, that's the same question for instance, smokers.
Not 220.
If smokers have to.
Not 300. It's not, you know, not 600. It's not 50.
Companies charge people who smoke. Companies charge people who are obese extra in terms of premiums for their health care. Or they give the people who don't smoke credits
but
if they prove that they don't smoke. So I don't know if there are numbers behind it. But
how much do you think, how strongly do you have to feel about the vaccine to pony up 200 a month?
200, yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people are like, okay, you know, I really didn't want to get this, but all right.
Give 200 it.
That's a pretty good inducement, isn't
it? Free shots.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty good inducement. Which also means you probably won't end up on a ventilator.
That's the calculation. You know, for some people, that's not the calculation in their head for whatever personal reasons, choices.
Also, some people think that there's a microchip in the vaccine that's going to allow the government to monitor.
That I can't get on board, but
well,
everybody has their reason.
If that's one of the reasons people aren't getting it, then just make up your own reason. And anything, I mean, I'm sure that means that some people think that aliens gave this to the Biden administration to somehow harness, you know, I don't know, keep people under control. I'm sure anything you can come up with, there are people out there that think that's why.
Think about the country that has been able to go to COVID zero the fastest, China.
Right.
And think of what they had to do to their population to do that. They exerted firm control.
Right.
And so people will point to that and say, you know, maybe this is the government's way. I'm not saying that that's the case at all. but that is some people's thinking.
Like, you see me, I got Moderna, two of them. If they told me Pfizer's got one ready for
booster.
Me and I want one, yeah, booster.
You'd go.
On the way home, I'd stop off. I don't care. Get a shot. Boom, I'm done. I got 29 times the antibodies or something. But the only thing that gives me pause is when I read Sean Penn is so out there in it saying you must vaccinate every, and that's when I'm like, God, do I need to rethink my position? Because when you know the guy visits Chavez and hates on any American president,
right.
So if when the left gets when the Hollywood left gets to that point, then I start thinking maybe I'm wrong on this. Do I need to rethink my position?
No, just stick with your beliefs, Joe.
You sure?
Please.
Joining us now is Shelley Archambault, board member of Verizon, Okta, and Nordstrom, and the former CEO of Metric Stream. Shelley, we had, just before we get into the meat of things, we had a discussion earlier. Do you think that number is just pulled out of thin air? You think they have any idea actuarially what they need to cover as a company for healthcare because of COVID for their employees? You think it's exactly $200 a month for unvaccinated employees?
Honestly, I can't tell you what Delta Airlines knows or doesn't know. I know all companies are looking at what their overall expenses are and what things cost, but I have no idea what went into the decision around $200.
I've got, you know, as you can imagine, in the social media world, there's a lot of people saying if you do the math on hospitalizations and it becomes serious, a 0.0 this and point, and that there's no way that that's a real number. Does it matter whether that's the actual number or not? Or can they just pull one out of thin air and say, hey, we're the company. You're either paying this or you're not going to work here.
Companies can decide what they're going to charge and how they're going to charge for different healthcare. If you look company to company, the premiums employees pay differ across companies. So each company decides what works for them and what doesn't. So can't comment on what they charge. And you ask, does it matter? It comes down to what behavior they're actually trying to drive. So it's really the concept of what they're doing more so than the actual dollar amount.
Why do you think they're hesitant to say, if you're coming in physically to the office, you can't come in unless you have the vaccine? Is there future liabilities, some type of lawsuits? What's the problem with just, you know, going full on with what they tell employees to do? Why half measures?
We are in unprecedented times. Every single company is trying to figure out how do they thread a very fine needle. They're trying to create an environment that's safe for their workers and their suppliers as well as their customers. At the same time, they need a workplace that will be efficient and productive. And they want to make sure they're also following different rules and laws and regulatory environments, which, by the way, are changing. States are coming up every day with new requirements of what you can do and what you can't do. So every company situation is very different. Some companies have situations which people have to work together and have to be close in proximity. Others, you don't. You can be remote. So therefore, what my rules are and what my policies are will be different. This is very unique to every single company.
We've always had the discussion, you know, not on all cable channels, I guess, but on some that there was a balance, saving lives and saving livelihoods in what we're both trying to do. At this point, if vaccinated people can have breakthrough cases of COVID, and if they can transmit COVID to either vaccinated or unvaccinated people, and we say this again and again, that then bring it home to their children and get, how, at this point, don't we need to have double vaxxed, double masks, social distancing? We're back to square one. If we try to get COVID cases to zero instead of the other 200 human transmissible infection, whatever you want to call it, diseases that we have now, there are people that say this is going to be added to that. There will be 201 because COVID's going to be around. It's never going to go to zero. So if there are vaccine breakthroughs, do we need to go back to masking indoors, masking outdoors, masking children in school, requiring double vaxes, work at home? You see what I'm saying? What is enough? When is it enough? What do we do?
The issue here with vaccinated, unvaccinated is if you're vaccinated, and the CDC has said, healthcare professionals have said, that if you're vaccinated, can you get COVID-19 or get the Delta variant? You can, but the level at which you will be ill is significantly different. The public policy issue here is overwhelming our hospitals. So we want to make sure if everybody's vaccinated, then yes, I might get it, but the odds show that I won't be hospitalized. Odds show that I will indeed recover.
So do we need to require masks in the workplace, even with vaccinated people again?
As long as we have a significant percentage of the population that is not vaccinated, that's why we're having to wear masks, because we need to protect the broad set of the population.
For a board member of companies that are so diverse, some really reliant on being, quote unquote, in office, like a Nordstrom versus other businesses that can operate pretty well remotely, how does liability factor into this? Liability that a company may face should they either not mandate or they mandate? I'm just curious what those sorts of discussions in the boardroom are like.
Decisions are made every day by companies and boards looking at the risks that are entailed by the different policies that they put in place. We are all trying to create an environment in which people are safe to work. And companies are starting with first educating, right? We need to educate our employees. We need to, yes, incent employees. And if nothing else works, we need to mandate the environment in which we need so that we can continue to operate our businesses. We need people to work. We need people to service our clients. And as you look across the board, that's really what all businesses are trying to do. They're trying to keep business and economy going.
If it is seasonal and it becomes similar to the flu and it comes back every year and we never reach 100% vaccinated, do we need to wear masks from here on out if you're in the workplace to keep cases at zero then?
Yeah. I am not the healthcare expert, but everything that I read says that if we can get ourselves to the point where the vast majority of people are vaccinated, then it significantly reduces, just like anything else that we fought in this country, whether you're talking about polio or measles, you know, et cetera. Once you get to the critical mass, then it does not have the kind of impact that we're seeing today. So no, I don't expect that we would all have to wear masks every day as we operate.
I got my first jab in January, my second in February. I think everybody should get it, but I look at what, if you take it to the nth degree and never want another COVID case ever to happen, you can see what the slippery slope that some people that don't have my opinion, you can see where they get some of their ideas, because this could go on forever. If vaccinated people are still contagious, I don't know what the future looks like, Shelley, but thank you. And that's what corporate managers are dealing with. And
that's right. It's a very tough environment.
Unbelievable. I lived for a long time, never thought about any of this. And that's all we think about now.
It's so true. And all companies want to do is to operate, serve their clients, treat their employees well, create a safe environment.
There's a little CYAing in there too, Shelley. Don't kid yourself. Anyway, we appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Still to come on Squawk Pod, why you may be shelling out a little bit more dough for your jelly. Smucker's CEO, Mark Smucker.
There is significant cost inflation across ingredients, packaging. Obviously, transportation and labor are playing a role. And even certain weather events have impacted costs of commodities and so forth.
Plus, it's National Dog Day. And, you know, we're pet people.
Time now for today's Aflac trivia question. Can you name Joe Kernan's three companions?
The answer, the interview, and the pups. When we come back.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC, today with Joe Kernan and Melissa Lee. Here's Joe.
Smucker out with earnings this morning, and we're joined now by the CEO, Mark Smucker. Not everyone knows you have a lot of pet products too on National Dog Day, but let's start with the results, because there's some interesting things happening. The stock's down a little bit today, Mark, and there is a tough environment in terms of raw material and logistics costs.
So the underlying fundamentals are strong, demand is strong. And fundamentally, the change in guidance is related to the significant inflation that we've experienced and some of the supply chain disruption. So we continue to manage those things. We've already moved our pricing a bit, working with our retail customers. And so we will be continuing to work with our customers to raise prices over the next several months. And we are confident that we'll be able to recover those costs, although the timing might be a little bit later than when we realize the costs.
So, Mark, this is pandemic-related, the supply chain volatility, even in it's not just chips and things like that. It's just logistics and everything else around the world. So it's pandemic-related.
It is largely pandemic-related. There is significant cost inflation across ingredients, packaging. Obviously, transportation and labor are playing a role. And even certain weather events have impacted costs of commodities and so forth. So we do view that these this inflation is somewhat transitory, but it likely will persist through the remainder of our fiscal year, which is through the late spring.
So, Mark, I think I saw your base somewhere in Ohio. I didn't recognize a town, but I'm sure Smucker is a great name to have in that town. But in Ohio, I'm not sure of the Delta variant, but you have employees everywhere. What is your current approach to getting employees vaccinated to be safe? You saw what Delta did. They're doing $200 a month for additional health insurance coverage.
Sure.
What is Smucker's approach right now?
Well, since the very beginning of the pandemic, our focus has been on keeping our employees safe and delivering the business. And so that is what we have done. I could not be prouder of our people and the way that they have continued to execute and deliver the business. We recently did bring back our mask mandate here in the office. We are in Northeast Ohio, and we've continued to encourage and educate our employees to get the vaccine. But we have not issued a mandate. We are monitoring it daily, extremely closely. But at this point, we have not made a decision to mandate a vaccine.
Done it yet. Do you think if you did, do vaccinated employees need to wear masks now too, Mark? Fully vaccinated?
Yes, at this point, because of the Delta variant and the way that obviously it is contracted or passed along, all of us are required to wear masks here in the office.
Obviously, we longtime fans of Smucker, and I remember, I think it was the old Squawk Box. There was a time when you bought, you're a jelly company, and you bought peanut butter. It was like, you know what? I get this. You know, there's a lot of synergies. A lot of synergies that escape me. And then they, you know, the investment bankers suggest a merger, and then they demerger. This is never being demergered. That was a good one. So I want to talk to you about some of your new products, because you've gone not just the iconic brands. You got some coffee that millennials probably like. You got some of these other things going on with you got Milk Bones, but you also got Rachel Ray, which I use for treats. So you've gone into the niche branding as well as the iconic brands.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. That's a great segue. Our strategy is really around making sure that we participate in all segments of the category. And coffee is a great example where we have Folgers, Dunkin', and Bustelo. You know, we grew share across all three of those brands in the quarter. And the strategy is really contingent upon the combination of iconic brands and faster growing brands. So with Dunkin' and Bustelo, significant growth in the quarter, as well as our entire K-Cup portfolio.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Uncrustables. And I was actually messaging one of your people, because I know there's a big controversy. Are they sandwiches or are they ravioli?
Wait, how does ravioli enter this discussion?
Because in the patent, they are sandwiches that are round, and
they're
have the little, and some people think they're like Pop-Tarts. But there was a patent dispute, Mark, and you won. There was a patent dispute for a patent that you own, whether it's really ravioli or whether...
What is the verdict, Mark?
It's a sandwich, right, Mark? And they're PB&J.
We refer to them as sandwiches, and that is the number one growth engine of the company right now. It's grown 29 consecutive quarters and double digit in the last several. So it's on fire. We love the brand, and we continue to push that.
I mean, you don't miss, it's like a PB&J, and they're frozen, but like when I see them at golf tournaments and there's a big vat of them and you take one, when were they unfrozen? That day? But they taste fresh and good, and it's pretty amazing.
Maybe there should be other fillings.
In 45 minutes.
There are. There's a lot of other fillings. You're expanding a lot of other fillings. It's a big growth engine for Smucker. We're joking around, but it's a big growth engine, I think. Uncrustables.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mark.
And speaking of dogs,
the answer to today's Aflac trivia question. Today is National Dog Day. Can you name Joe Kernan's three companions? The answer, Pongo, Gunther, Freddie. They are truly Joe's best friends.
That's true. I can't believe the producer got our guy who does all those voiceovers to do
that. The way he said it, too, is so... full of meaning. They are his best friends.
And every day I read more and more about, you know, mental people that have are depressed. They do so much. Comfort dogs. Mm-hmm. There's Pongo on Pongo
Comfort
B.
Dog.
But I think there's National Blankety Blank Day inflation. But National Dog Day is one that we really should celebrate. Maybe National Animal Day because they're so pure.
National
and
Pet
so
Day.
Good. National Pet
All
Day.
All pets can be.
They're so good
you
and so pure.
Lizard.
They do so much for us, and they never ask for thanks. Just rate treats.
And that does it for us today on Squawk Pod. Thank you for listening, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.